The word that came to mind as I reflected on the widow's gift was awful. In its classic usage, and to some degree we're still maybe vaguely aware of what it means or what it can mean, awful has several forms. We can use it very casually in its weakest form, as in, oh, this is taking an awful long time, but we also recognize some of the older forms and meanings behind awful, as in dreadful, terrible, shocking, terrifying, or awful, as in awesome, something that inspires awe, something that is inspiring and powerful. This story of the widow, to me, is awful in both those senses. It is dreadful to see that someone out of devotion and trust in God has been led to the point where they will give away the last bit that they have to live on. And yet it is awful in the sense of awe. It is humbling to see someone willing to do that in their life. It is inspiring and moving and powerful. It is awful. In this passage that we heard read for us, Mark contrasts clearly scribes who devour widows' homes with a widow who gives her whole means of life support away freely. He contrasts scribes, and notice that he says scribes who, and then goes on to describe them. Not that all the scribes were in this same desperate predicament, but some were listening to Jesus. Some were close to heaven, the kingdom of heaven, and were seeking it. But there were some scribes who were seeking only their own gain. Scribes who enjoyed respect, enjoyed places of privilege, and were somehow able to overlook that they were the means of impoverishing people who were vulnerable. Jesus condemned them for benefiting from widows who gave away all they have. But then he turned around and praised the widow for giving away all she had. Now, perhaps like me, you've heard this passage used for fundraising appeals. Gosh, sort of missing the whole point. If you are fundraising using this passage, aren't you running the risk of becoming like those scribes who devoured the livelihoods of others? But Jesus praises the widow. What is it that he saw? If you can picture it, what is it that Jesus saw in the widow? An act of trust in God? An act of thanksgiving to God? Can you picture in your mind someone you know whose heart and life is characterized by thanksgiving? Someone who always seems to be able to see a positive side of things? Someone who's always ready to say thank you and to share what they have, however little it is. I remember working in a care home for almost 10 years, and there were always a few like that. In the midst of everything that had been taken from them, their independence and what we would call their dignity. And yet, in the midst of their poverty, there were always some who would smile and say thank you, who would always have a kind word, who would always be looking to make peace and to encourage, in spite of their position of humility and deprivation. Jesus looked, and what did he see? An act of devotion to God? An act of love for God? Now, God doesn't need the money. God doesn't need and didn't need animal sacrifices either. As God says in Psalm 50, "Do I drink the blood of goats Do you think I eat the flesh of animals? And if I did, I wouldn't need your help in getting that food. I have cattle on 1,000 hills. The whole world is mine. Humans are the ones in need. We are the ones with need. We are the ones who are impoverished. And strangely, when we give away, somehow it helps us. Somehow we are fed by that. Somehow when we give away, we end up wealthier. In the midst of our need and poverty, Jesus came to change us, to set us free, to transform us. The commands that he gives to us are meant to change our hearts as we practice them. And so we fast. And this is to shake loose the hold that food can have on us. To find as we fast that there are all sorts of ways that God feeds us throughout the day. To find that there are all sorts of ways that we rely on food to help us manage our behavior. We give away our possessions and our money to shake loose the hold that money and possessions can have on us and on our hearts. Money and authority, ironically, can end up feeding anxiety instead of diminishing it. It can feed worry. And less surprisingly, having those things can feed greed and indifference to others, selfishness, and even violence. And so Jesus encourages us to give cheerfully and freely. How much? Many of us have heard the idea of giving 10% of our gross income. It isn't biblical exactly, but it is a handy and challenging amount for many of us. My brother-in-law told me once that he aims for 20%. I had a professor, Dr. Charlie Cook, and he challenged us while we were still young to set a limit on our spending. I would never spend above this much. So that if we found ourselves making more and more, we would always give away an increasing amount instead of keeping it the same. As the widow taught us, the point isn't how much you give. Lots or little, it doesn't really matter. What matters is that you are free, that you learn to live in the freedom that God grants you through Jesus. What matters is drawing closer to God, of experiencing in your own lives that God provides for you and feeds you, that God loves you. What matters is listening to God, learning to discern what God is asking you to do day by day, and being able to do it. If you don't already give for your own sakes, Do committing to give to those in need. Give to charities. Give to the church. It is for your own life. In this passage, Mark, I think, is using a play on words, but it's in Greek. Mark says, she gave the whole of her bios, the whole of her life. Now, elsewhere in the New Testament, we translate this as well as the means of livelihood, the means of life. And that does seem to be that that's what that expression meant when it's used this way. That she had given up her livelihood, her means of self-support, her income source. But literally what Mark says is she gave up the whole of her life. What did Jesus see? Jesus knew that he was about to lose his whole life. I think he saw someone who got it. Jesus could see He wasn't entirely alone in understanding how the world really works. What really matters. He saw someone else quietly surrendering her life to God without fanfare or any thought of recognition. He wasn't alone. The contrast here is between scribes who used their position to secure what they felt they needed, what they were afraid of losing, and the widow who gave away her whole life. With this contrast, Mark ends Jesus' public teaching. He ends Jesus' public teaching in the temple. Jesus had entered dramatically into the very center of his people's power. Jerusalem, the temple, the throne of David. And he had done so in a beautiful reversal, riding in as a champion, not on a war horse with soldiers at his side, but riding on a humble donkey, the foal of a donkey, with children singing beside him. His defiance inside the temple, disrupting its trade and the sacrifices, and then his defiance in publicly confronting and criticizing the leadership right there in the heart of their power, in the very center of their power, this is what sealed Jesus' fate. Before, he might have been just a nuisance, increasingly a nuisance, but now he was a threat. And now it was personal. The contrast that is made here between these selfish scribes, these self-seeking men, and this widow also concludes several large thematic arcs in the Gospel according to Mark. Jesus has been critiquing all along those who use their position of power to meet their own needs. And he has been insisting that his disciples become servants, slaves, instead. The first will be last, and the last will be first. With this, Jesus is critiquing father, husband, public leader, whoever it is, who insists on being respected, obeyed, served, and insisting that if they wish to follow him, they must become servants. He is trying to set them free from being slaves to their own fleshly needs and wants. And Jesus insisted that his disciples seek to be fed by God each day so that they might be free to give and to share what they have and to serve. These days, many people in our culture are drawn to a person who attacks those in power. Who attacks those in power for preying on the vulnerable. To a person who attacks how our system as a whole can end up perpetuating violence and oppression. But the danger for us is that we take down those in power only to replace another power, to replace them with another power. And then when the people themselves resist change, the temptation is to hate, to slander. The temptation is even to use violence, to use power to make people change. This is the way the world works, pragmatic politicians and political scientists and activists will say, this is the way this world works, and this is the way we need to work. But if you open up social media, or the radio, or the television, or the newspaper, it is clear that this isn't working, and it has never worked. What Jesus showed us is that the way the world works is by a widow bringing two insignificant coins, the whole of her life, and giving it away in trust and in obedience to God out of love. This is how the world really works. And one day, the other way, the violence and the grasping at power, one day that will no longer be tolerated. It will cease to be upheld by God's grace, and instead it will collapse in on itself. It will destroy itself. Like the psalmist says, these weapons will end up being turned against the ones holding them. They will fall into the pits that they have dug for others. And one day, only the way that the world really works, one day that is all that will be left. Jesus showed us how to, as we like to say these days, speak truth to power. Yes, he critiqued those in power, but he was almost dismissive of them. Dismissive of those both in the caught up in the temple politics and the government. Oh, Herod, as he waves him away, as if it doesn't really matter, as if that isn't really how the world works. Instead, Jesus modeled a competing way of life. He didn't just critique the system. He didn't compete for the power. Instead, he created a new way of living each day. And he had his followers live differently together. It was a life of prayer. It was a life of eating together. It was a life of putting others first, always. It was a life, above all, of love, of affection, and of care for one another. It was a life of loving children, of husbands and wives loving each other, of loving those in need, those who are grieving, those who are sick. And Jesus won people over, one person at a time. As the Anglican bishop, the indigenous bishop, Mark MacDonald says, Jesus' kingdom spreads heart to heart and home to home. Jesus' kingdom spreads as the followers of Jesus try and change how they're living. How they're living in relationship with others, and then by inviting other people to live that way as well. And for 2,000 years, this is what has worked. The final piece of Jesus' teaching in the Gospel according to Mark will be Jesus' death and resurrection. And it changed how his disciples understood everything that Jesus had said. Jesus' death and resurrection added new depth and meaning to everything that he had taught them. And it changed how they looked at how Jesus had chosen to live. Just how far was Jesus asking his disciples to go in trusting God? Just how far was Jesus asking them to go in serving others? Just how far was Jesus asking them to go, to let go of concerns about dignity and self-respect, obedience and power? Just how far was Jesus willing to go to show that the last will be first? Jesus showed us in his own life by dying for his enemies. What is God asking you to give up? What is God asking you to let go of? Where do you feel impoverished? As if you were to let go of one more thing, you wouldn't be able to hold on anymore. As if this thing that you are holding on to is essential for your life at this moment. You couldn't possibly give that away. Is there something like that in your life? We will struggle to give and to love if we feel that we don't have enough to have our own needs met. And so Jesus feeds those who come to him. So where is that happening in your life? Where are you meeting Jesus and being fed abundantly? And are you in a position of authority? Are you a father? A mother? Are you a spouse? A friend? Are you a boss? A business owner? Are the people in your care there to serve your needs? Or are you there to serve them? What is Jesus asking for here? Nothing more than he is willing to give. Nothing more than he is willing to do. Jesus is asking and seeking for people who are willing to give up their whole life. In Paul's words, this is your spiritual act of worship. Thanks be to God. Amen.